This is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking today about Time Magazine's cover story, The State of the American Woman, a special report. We talked about some of these related issues just about 3 or 4 weeks ago with Maureen Dowd's column, Blue is the New Black, in which she was talking about the fact that women report themselves to be less happy as they get older. And the big take-home from that was that a generation after the feminist movement, women seem to say they have reported all kinds of advances in statistics, professional advancement, in access to different sectors of society, but they report themselves simultaneously to be less happy. The Time Magazine special report is pretty comprehensive, a lot of data in here, talking points I think we're really going to want to look at and talk about. And we're going to get to that discussion in just a moment. I'll be providing links at the website today for this program to Time Magazine's cover story. You can go right now to time.com and look at the cover story. You may have a copy of the print edition. Remember that? That's the one you guys are holding in your hand, not reading the screen. You may have one nearby. You may want to grab that as well. We'll be talking about this in just a moment. We want to invite you to join the discussion on the state of the American woman. The issue here has to do especially with the emergence of a body of statistical data that should really capture our attention. We're not so much concerned with the math, but with the morality. Not so much concerned with the statistics, but with the society. And I'm not so much concerned with the global issues, but with the lives of those whom I know and love, as you are, especially women and children. And especially when it comes to a report like this, looking at younger women and their expectations and what some are now warning is going to be a very different reality, not the reality that either their mothers or their grandmothers were looking for. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. To join the conversation, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a review of some issues in the news. It's not every day that religious news makes the front page in this sense. The front page of yesterday's Wall Street Journal headline, Vatican in bold bid to attract Anglicans. If you looked at yesterday's newspapers, pretty much across the board, the headlines trumpeted this story. I wanted to look at it a bit more deeply before talking about it on the air. And so I've done everything from go to the Vatican for information to looking at the international coverage of this. The bottom line is that this is a big story. There is not less here than meets the eye. There's probably more here than meets the eye. I've had several people who have written me about it, asked questions about it. The reality is that the Vatican has established what is called an apostolic constitution, which means a formal arrangement whereby Anglicans, that means here in the United States, largely Episcopalians, but worldwide, Anglicans, those churches associated with the Reformation in England and with the Church of England, can now much more easily, and while retaining much more of their Anglicanism, convert to Roman Catholicism. Now, if you look at Anglicanism today, if you look at it worldwide, there has always been a major branch known as Anglo-Catholicism. In other words, there has always been a part of the Church of England that was just kind of barely reformed, and when it came to theology, not all that reformed. Even as the Church was the product of the Reformation, its particular Reformation trajectory was as set by Tudor politics, that is, the politics of Henry VIII and his successor Elizabeth I, than theological issues. But there were genuine theological issues, and there were genuine reformers, and the Church of England has always had a certain divide between those who had a more Puritan bent, and they clearly saw themselves as opposed theologically to not only the Catholic Church, but the Catholic influence, and then to the Anglo-Catholic wing, which was always reluctantly split from the Catholic Church. Why now, 4+ centuries after the Reformation, would this become an issue? It's because the Anglican Communion is being torn apart by debates over sexuality, in particular, and marriage, and the blessing of same-sex unions, and the consecration of openly gay bishops and priests. And it is leading to the point that entire dioceses are leaving the Episcopal Church U.S., and you've got literally millions of former Anglicans or former members of the Episcopal Church, over time falling away and some of them establishing new organizations. And worldwide, you're seeing a divide that is almost impossible to comprehend. It's so big, it's hard to take it in. You have churches in Africa and in what's known as the Southern Hemisphere, the Global South, they call it, that are holding fast to the gospel and to biblical truths concerning sexuality and homosexuality and marriage and all the rest, and the exclusivity of the gospel, by the way. And then you have in North America and in much of Europe a very different direction. The great divide is there evident. And if you're a conservative in an awful lot of these churches, if you want to hold to theological orthodoxy, and by that I'm not even referring at this point to Reformation orthodoxy. I just mean like the doctrine of the Trinity, the literal physical resurrection of Christ from the dead. If you're kind of headed in a Catholic direction, there can be some motivation here to go into the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, however, has always been a church by conversion, glad to take converts, but also pretty restrictive in terms of what those converts can bring with them. For instance, in worship style, in what is known as the rite, R-I-T-E, the liturgy of worship. But in recent years, the Catholic Church has gone to two different liturgies anyway. One of those liturgies has been the basic, traditional Latin Mass. And then there has been, of course, well, let's put it this way, pre-Vatican II and post-Vatican II Masses. One in Latin, that's pre-Vatican II, and one after that, which is in the vernacular, the common language. And now, by this apostolic constitution, Pope Benedict XVI has announced that Anglicans who come in can now follow their own Anglican liturgy within the Roman Catholic Church. Let me tell you what the newspapers and other media sources are focusing on. This will mean, because this will lead to an infusion of many, many people out of the more Catholic-leaning wing of the Anglican Communion into the Roman Catholic Church. This is going to lead to large numbers. As a matter of fact, in this morning's edition of a major British newspaper, it was reported that 400,000 disaffected Anglicans are likely to join in one mass movement. So you're talking about a massive reconversion to the Roman Catholic Church. As the Wall Street Journal says, this is unprecedented since the Reformation. Let me just read you the first paragraph. It says, the Vatican has said it will make it far easier for disgruntled Anglicans to convert to Catholicism in one of Rome's most sweeping gestures to a Protestant church since the Reformation. The marriage issue is huge in this because these married Anglican priests who converted are going to be able to take their wives. And this is going to lead to a radical expansion, the largest expansion in the history of the Roman Catholic Church since the rite of celibacy, that is the rule of celibacy within the church. It's going to lead to the biggest infusion of married priests into the life of the Roman Catholic Church. And as liberal Roman Catholics see, that's going to likely open the door for the question, at least, as to whether the rule of celibacy continues. So liberals in the church see this as an opportunity, but more than that, they see it as a very daunting challenge. Why? It's because those Anglicans who are coming in are not liberal Anglicans. They're more conservative, traditionalist Anglicans. And so, for instance, you've got more liberal Roman Catholics in North America and in Europe saying this isn't good news because these Anglicans who are coming are going to be the last people who are going to want women bishops. They're going to be the last people who are going to want women priests. They're going to be the last people who are going to want the blessings of same-sex unions. And so, well, just to put the obvious in perspective, it's going to be fascinating to watch this. Now, here in North America, the question is how many are likely to move in that direction. And most experts here looking at the North American Anglican picture say it's likely to be a far smaller number. Why? It's because the Episcopalians who exited the Episcopal Church U.S. because of its liberalism tend to be not so much in this country from the Anglo-Catholic wing, but from the more evangelical wing. And if they really are from the evangelical wing, they're going to know that Christian orthodoxy extends not only to those doctrines we hold in common with the Roman Catholic Church, the concern about the doctrine of the Trinity, the full deity and humanity of Christ, etc., but they're going to understand that the gospel rests on a structure of doctrine that goes far beyond that, and in particular to the doctrine of justification by faith alone. We're going to face a very clear and interesting future here looking at this question, but those Episcopalians who have left the Episcopal Church U.S. and are now in either one of these churches or dioceses that has left and associated with the new Anglican Church in America or some other body, they're going to ask some big questions. But I hope in the midst of this, they do not forget the imperative of the gospel. I hope their theological concern extends to justification by faith alone. And as much as I have to see this as a very, very savvy move by the Roman Catholic Church and by a pope who would might who might be expected among traditionalists to be the last one to offer this particular move to Anglicans. As much as you see this as a very, very clever and timely move on the part of the Roman Catholic Church, here's one evangelical who's hoping that we discover that an awful lot of these conservatives and traditionalists who left the Episcopal Church because of its liberalism really are evangelical after all. Within a short amount of time, we're likely to know. We're going to come back to talk about the Time magazine cover story on the state of the American woman. A lot there to talk about, trust me. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Your calls, and we'll be right back with the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Time Magazine's cover story has a very interesting piece of art on it showing a woman's face, special report in black and white, the state of the American woman. Here on the cover of Time Magazine for this week, it says, a new poll shows why they are more powerful but less happy. It's a comprehensive report, very, very interesting. Nancy Gibbs always writes interesting stuff for Time Magazine. She has a keen eye on the culture, even when I disagree with her. I always know her stuff's important. This is an important article. Now, just a few weeks ago, we talked about the Maureen Dowd article, Blue is the New Black, in which she was talking about why women, as they grow older, are unhappy, and as compared to men in particular. But now, in this comprehensive report, Nancy Gibbs takes out some of the same data from the General Social Survey. Also looks at stuff from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and a massive study Time Magazine did interviewing and researching American women. And she's really come up with some fascinating stuff, some of it very troubling. But the quiet revolution she talks about is the fact that feminism has made basically gains far beyond what the movement had in mind, even had envisioned in the most optimistic moments when it came to progress for women in employment, in income, in access to education, other sectors of society. But at the same time, as Nancy Gibbs says, those who pushed for such things are now confounded by the fact it didn't bring the happiness they were hoping for. My guest here in the studio is Dr. Denny Burke, who's dean at Boyce College, which is a part of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, our undergraduate college. You've been looking at this data and at this report. Denny, what does it mean to you? I mean, first of all, we want to invite women to join this conversation. Let me remind you that. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. But Denny, even as we've been talking about this data, what do you think this really represents, especially from a Christian perspective?
I think what you're seeing in the culture is that the feminist worldview, which was an agenda 40, 50 years ago, has now become entrenched in the way that people are living and the way that people think. I mean, that's the bottom line here. And so all the changes that she's tracking in this article that have occurred in society are really a result of women going more to work and not being at home as much, women being more free sexually than they were in previous generations because of the result of the sexual revolution and the changes in contraception that have happened since then. And so really we're looking at a cultural shift that she's tracking. It started as a worldview change, and now we're seeing it lived out in people's lives.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you start looking at the data, and it's indeed a bit more daunting than even you could imagine at first. Just in terms of the social change regarding women and their role, in 1972, only 7% of students playing high school sports were girls. Now the number is six times as high. The female dropout rate from high school has fallen in half. College campuses used to be 60-40 male. Now the ratio, it's not equal. It's not 50-50. It's reversed. It's 60% women, 40% men. Half the Ivy League university presidents are women. Two of the three network anchors soon will be women. Three of the four most recent secretaries of state have been women. There are more than 145 foundations designed to empower women around the world. As Nancy Gibbs writes, we just came through an election year in which Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, Tina Fey, and Katie Couric were lead players, not the supporting cast. And yet, she says, women, after all, are not that happy because when it comes to their own measures of happiness, it's just not there.
No, that's a fact. And this is what confounds Gibbs in her article. She doesn't understand, because you see all these different cultural changes. You see women out in the workplace more than in previous generations. You see them in powerful positions like you've just listed, and yet the happiness quotient is down in study after study after study. Women aren't necessarily more happy than they were previously. As a matter of fact, many of them are more depressed. And my argument would be is I think there's been a severing here of the way that women are living with what God's ideal for femininity is. And that's what's happened in this cultural revolution.
Well, it is a revolution. Let's just talk about some of the statistics here. By the way, it's very clear that Nancy Gibbs is trying not to spark all the hot cultural and moral issues when she writes this article, but it's also clear she can't avoid them.
Oh, no.
So let me just read to you what she writes here. She says, among the most dramatic changes in the past generation is the detachment of marriage and motherhood. She goes on, that's only one phrase from a sentence, Denny. It is shocking to me that someone could write a sentence in which she says that one effect is the detachment of marriage from motherhood. That's huge.
Oh, that's everything. And I would say this. I would go a step further and say it's not feminism has not only achieved the detachment of marriage from motherhood, but they've achieved the detachment of reproduction from human sexuality. And that's really been the goal the whole time, because it was viewed at the inception of the feminist movement, this latest wave of the feminist movement, that having children, having a family was not a blessing, but it was a limitation. It's what kept you from being equal to men in the workplace and in terms of the power differential that was perceived in society. And the way you eliminate those inequalities is you eliminate the limitations that are upon women, and one of them being children. And so the natural consequence of human sexuality for women is children. And if you're going to be equal with men, you've got to eliminate that. And so that's where contraception comes in. The whole sexual revolution was really part and parcel of the feminist agenda.
You know, by the way, Susan Faludi, very well-known feminist, as a way of kind of dismissing this concern, said, and I quote, did I write this down, quote, the women's movement wasn't about happiness. Oh, good grief. Are we discounting human happiness as a good now, to the extent that we're going to say that other things such as fairness and representation, career advancement, that all these things are actually more important than happiness? You know, it reminds me of the old Marxists, Denny. You know, Marx himself said that people who did not know they were oppressed, who were happy in their economic situation when he thought they shouldn't be happy, he said they were affected by false consciousness. You know, and he said, as a part of their oppression, they're so oppressed they don't know they're oppressed. Well, I have before me right now a report entitled The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness. It comes from the American Economic Journal of Economic Policy. It is just out in the year 2009. Betsy Stevenson and Justin Wolfers writing, and by the way, Justin Wolfers is an economist at the University of Pennsylvania. This is from the summary of the research. It says that women in the 1970s, that's before the feminist revolution had had much effect, that they reported themselves by higher subjective well-being than men. In other words, they said, we're happy. And more women said they were happy than men said they were happy. Now, after the feminist revolution, it's reversed. Now, see, even the Maureen Dowd article did not have that data. That's the reason why I thought we got to talk about this today.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's one thing to talk about why men are happier than women later in life. That's what Maureen Dowd was looking at. Interesting article. A good topic for conversation. But now when I'm looking at this, you have people who are trying to defend the feminist revolution. They're steadfast. Talk about false consciousness. They're afraid that if they take one step back and say that anything could have gone wrong, that they've become traitors to the class, so to speak, letting down the team, as one feminist famously said. But now their own statistical data is indicating that women were happier, by their own reporting, in the 1970s than in the first decade of the 20th century. Time magazine thought it was worth a cover story. I'll tell you, I don't always understand why Time put some stories on the cover, but this one, you bet I do. This is huge. And I hope you understand why it's huge. I'd love to hear from especially women listeners out there and those who have been reading this material. What does it say to you? What does it say about the feminist movement? Is it dying as a result of its own success? Or was its success actually a disaster when it came to female happiness? The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the place for intelligent conversation about the things that matter. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We are discussing Time Magazine's cover story for this week, The State of the American Woman. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, as I look at this report, it seems to me that it's notable both for what it says and what it doesn't say. And I've been looking at some of the underlying research. Let me tell you, there's even more to this story than Time Magazine recognized when it made it a cover story. By the way, you look at the number of cover stories available to a major news magazine in a year, and then it's about 50. As a matter of fact, about 2 weeks they do not produce. So that means that 50 times a year they get to decide what's the big story. And when you consider the volume of news, that means that's very, very important media real estate. And they thought this story was that important. My guess is they also thought this cover story would sell a few point-of-sale magazines at the checkout counter. I wonder what women are thinking of this. That's what I'm hoping to hear today. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Denny Burke, Dr. Burke is the dean at Boyce College, our undergraduate program here at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's been looking at this research. We've been talking about this together. We're going to go first to the calls coming in. Well, number one is Kathy calling from Towson, Maryland. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, I just wanted to throw something else out there into the discussion. You were talking about the separation of marriage and motherhood, and I think that the feminist movement has taken it even further, and now you can be a mother without raising your children. Women, for the most part, most women, when they have their children, very quickly return to work, and they're robbed of that joy of raising their family. I just wanted to throw that out there and see what other people thought about that. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I've just gone back to teaching, but my youngest is now in school. And I just think of all of the years of pleasure that so many women have missed out on.
Kathy, let me give you a statistic here, and it's from a new report entitled The Marriage Index. And a week from today, next Thursday, we're going to be talking on this program with Maggie Gallagher, who is president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. We're going to be looking at that data, but one of the indices that goes into that is the percentage of children living with their own married parents. And this is not just getting to what you're talking about, Kathy, with caregiving. This is just even living with. And before you even get to who's taking care of whom, only 61% of America's children lived in a home with intact married parents in the year 2007. And then you look at how many of these children do not have a parent in the home while they are in their preschool years, full time. It's a shocking thing. Kathy, did you hear, by the way, the recent family declaration from President Obama? Just interested to see if you heard something I heard. He spoke about the fact that we need to honor those who are raising our children in America's homes. He said parents, grandparents, and caregivers. You know, it just struck me that that was a really sad commentary on where we are as a country right now, that you have to break it down just that far.
Oh, I agree, and you see it in the children. I'm back into teaching now, and you can just see. And the behavior problems and the kids that are acting out for attention, and then you go look at the after-school list, and you see who doesn't get picked up by mom or dad and who has to go to after-school care because mom's working all day. And it's tough. I know the economy is tough, and I know there are people that say, well, I have to work, but I think we've bought into this whole notion that we need the newest car and the best house and the best neighborhood. And, you know, you don't. And you can make it work on one income. You just have to set your own priorities and know that your children are your number one. And there's happiness in that.
Yeah, I can tell that in your voice, Kathy, and I really appreciate that. Thanks so much for your call. And, you know, Kathy added some qualifications there, what we are talking about and not talking about. And what we're talking about specifically are the priorities that parents set, the priority that a couple establishes. there may be short-term circumstances that would require any number of adjustments, but the question is, what is the long-term vision? What's the priority? Where are we making decisions as parents to say, at least for those years when we have young children in the home, there's going to be one of us at home all the time, and in particular, mom in the home, able to do what only moms can do. And what Denny Burke and I were talking about, just in terms of looking at this story, is the fact that there's a huge theological issue at stake here. When we come back, we're going to talk about what that is. We're also going to take more calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, when we were looking at the Maureen Dowd piece just a few weeks ago, I made the point then that a lot of people are asking, is this unhappiness because women are working against their nature? Well, you know, I think a secularist can ask that question. I can't ask it just that way. I think the bigger issue is that feminism has misled women into acting against what God's purpose and plan is for them in terms of the priority of their lives. And I don't have to tell you that women on the other side of the feminist revolution are more unhappy than they were before. That's what they are reporting by their own estimation of their own self-satisfaction, well-being, and happiness. That's why Time Magazine thought, this is a cover story. Back with more in just a moment on the Albert Mueller Program.
Good.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Does this strike a nerve? Evidently, Time Magazine's cover story is striking all kinds of nerves, all kinds of chatter about it across the blogosphere and the World Wide Web and on the talking head shows on television and radio. We're talking about it here today because I think it's really important. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. Time Magazine's point is that women have made massive progress in terms of the goals of the feminist movement, but on the other side of it, by their own reporting, they say they're less happy than they were before. In the 1970s, women reported themselves significantly happier than in the years of the first decade of the 21st century, which is a surprise, I think. That's why Time Magazine made it a cover story. The phone number is 877-893-TALK, 877-893-8255. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Felly's on the line listening on WFIA. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just commenting just because I am a working mother. I have four children. My mother was a working mother. And I do think that we have huge responsibility to our children to show them all aspects of life. I mean, there are huge demands on the family at this time, not only the mother but the father. And that's why you have to prioritize. My children are a blessing from God, and therefore I tell them daily I have made a commitment to God because he blessed me with you to show you the Christian way. And that's not just in my household. It's in the community. It's in my work. It's in my daily life. Wherever my feet touch, I should be the example of Christ.
Well, I'm certainly not going to argue with that. And wherever any of us are, there should be the example of Christ. Feli, let me ask you a question. When you either read or hear of this Time Magazine article about why women on the other side of the feminist revolution are less happy than they were before, you know, what do you think about that? What's your response to that? What do you think's going on there?
And again, just walking in these shoes, I will say that the demands are great right now. Finding a balance is hard.
Yeah.
But I think if you put Christ in the center, it's easy to find your balance. And if that's where the hole is, then yes, people are unhappy.
Feli, thanks so much for your call. The point that Feli's making is very similar to that made by Maureen Dowd in an article in the New York Times. She had one section, I don't have it right here in front of me, but she said, you know, the old expectation is that women had to do X and Y and Z. And she said the new expectation is that women do A, B, and C. Oh, and they still have to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, from a secular perspective, that make perfect sense as to why that would be very frustrating. And I appreciate very much Feli's call. You know, again, the issue here is happiness. And, you know, I love this quote from Susan Faludi when she said feminism wasn't about happiness. I think that's very revealing. You know, I would be, as a theologian, one of the first to say I don't think happiness is the greatest human good. I would say that faithfulness is. But from a Christian perspective, faithfulness and happiness should be tied together. Here in the studio with me is Denny Burke. Dr. Burke is dean at Boyce College, the undergraduate program here at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Denny, let me come back and ask you a fundamental theological question. I want you to test my theory. Tell me if you think it makes sense. We should be concerned with human happiness because that happiness ought to be found where the glory of God is demonstrated and where human beings, Christians in particular, are responding in faithfulness.
Well, absolutely. And what we would say is probably not a woman's place is in the home, but that her priority is the home, biblically speaking. And what's happened is feminism has sold women a bill of goods. They've told women over these years that you have to have contraception. You have to have the pill so you can be freed from the consequence of children. You have to have abortion so that you can be freed from the consequence of children. You have to have affordable daycare so that you can be freed from the consequence of children. And what you have in the scriptures is this call for women and mothers to make a priority of the home and to support her husband as a helper, Genesis 2. And so there's a design there from the very beginning that gives a special vocation to women, and feminism is telling women to go against what that design is. And the argument from Scripture would be is that we are the most happy when we are the most holy, when we are living out what God has called us to be. And feminism, in so many ways, has just called women away from that happiness and put them in a place that's very unhappy.
Very, very interesting. It says here that 84% of women agree with the statement, women who have children are just as committed to their jobs as women who do not have children. 84% agreed with that. Only 13% disagreed with that. I just have to say, as a man, who has a job with more demands than I can keep track of, the fact that I'm a father means that that I am not as committed to my job as if I did not have children. Now, if anyone's shocked by that, I'm sorry, but I think that's what's honoring to Christ. I am a father, and there's an important responsibility there. And yes, there are places I can't be where I otherwise might be, and there is time I can't give because I am a father. And I can't imagine that 84% of women actually say that they're just as committed to their jobs as women who do not have children. I don't get that. I want to be clear. I don't get that for men, and I certainly don't get that for women.
Well, absolutely. There's only so many hours in a day, and there's a certain beauty and a certain logic to God's design that God has designed and formed women to be prioritizing at the home and for the nurture of children in ways that, well, frankly, we can't all do that as husband and wife. I mean, we all have responsibilities there, but women have a special calling when it comes to the home and to the children.
And a special gifting.
And yes,
special intuitions.
That's
right. They're made for this in a way that men are not. This is no excuse for men being distracted and away from the home and disconnected and irresponsible. But there is a particular calling and giftedness that God gives to women. You know, Denny, I have to think of something else. In the opening of this broadcast, I talked about this news coming from the Vatican about this new apostolic constitution to invite Anglicans to convert into Roman Catholicism. And the big controversy coming from the Roman Catholic side is what this means, all these married priests coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to come back as an evangelical to say I am so thankful for 1 Timothy 3 that says that the one who is to be a teaching pastor is to be the husband of one wife, and you also have there a very clear reference to the fact that his household is to be in order. I think one of the reasons why the New Testament expectation is a pastor who's married and in the main will have children is because he's modeling not only the faithfulness of a minister in ministry, but the faithfulness of a minister as a husband and father.
And he's modeling Christ, because he's loving his wife as Christ loved the church, and really it becomes a picture of the gospel. And I think the feminist movement, in that respect, undermines that gospel picture in marriage.
You know, the Time magazine cover story is interesting. It's a fascinating and, I think, pretty comprehensive secular discussion of the topic. But, you know, we're coming back to it because from a Christian perspective, we better have a lot more to say than what Time magazine would aspire to say. Back to Final Thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It was a fascinating discussion as we were talking about the state of American women, Time Magazine's cover story. It's a fascinating thing because it tells us something that that has caught the secular attention. The fact that it's caught Time Magazine's attention is huge. You know, I saw the Maureen Dowd article. I thought, we ought to talk about that. But the number of people who will see this cover story goes far beyond that. The number of those who will read the New York Times. And there are an awful lot of women out there who have been sending me notes of electronic websites and things saying, have you seen this article? You're going to talk about it. I've had pastors send it to me and say, have you seen it? You're going to talk about it. Well, today we saw it and we talked about it. My guest here in the program, here in the studio, has been Denny Burke, the Dean of Boyce College at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Denny, you know, what's the take home from this for you? You know, you look at this, what's the bottom line?
I don't want Christians to miss what is going on around them and how much the worldview of the ambient culture has affected them. You know, at bottom, this is a theological issue, and this is an issue of discipleship for believers. The Bible teaches that the norm for male and female is that for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cling to his wife. That is the norm that we see in Genesis. And there's a glory in that because Paul says this mystery is great. And this mystery, he says, is he's speaking with reference to Christ in the church. And so the deepest meaning of our sexuality, the deepest meaning of motherhood and of fatherhood and of marriage is really this mystery of Christ in the church. It's the gospel. And so what's being undermined by feminism is so satanic in the sense that it's undermining this picture that the Lord has given us of the gospel. And so that's what I want Christians to see, what's at stake in this, and that this is not just an optional add-on to the way that you think about Christianity. This goes up to the heart of what it means to be a disciple. God calls us to be disciples as male and female, and that has implications for the way we think about home life.
Yeah, gender's a part of the goodness of God's creation, and that's really, really important. And as a part of the goodness of God's creation, it's a blessing that that we should see as that for which we should be thankful. And when we understand that it's a part of the goodness of God's creation, here's what we understand. When we get it wrong, it doesn't lead to greater human happiness. The essence of a secular philosophy is that it tries to come up on secular grounds with a recipe for human happiness, and every one of them lead somewhere else. It's fascinating to have that documented in a form like this. The cover story in Time Magazine was The State of the American Woman. I'll be writing about it, and you can find my article at albertmoeller.com. You'll also find links to the program today for Time Magazine's cover story. If you haven't read it, you'll want to take the time to read it. Use some Christian worldview analysis and see what you think. Thanks to Denny Burke for being my guest here in the studio today. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Moeller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.